Okay, lots of spoilers now. We have gone past the point of being cautious around spoilers. And we're now in the depths of spoiler territory. And we're going to be talking today about Sydney, the sous chef. She was introduced very early on as a new hire. And there are interactions with her and many of the characters that have an incredible arc and relate to group dynamics and team development that we are going to discuss today. So once again, I'm joined by my wonderful guests, co-hosts, friends, Christopher Ortiz, and Lisa, used to be Falkingham, a friendly voice, Hunt.
Oh, it still says that. That was from long time ago.
Because I have to do some of the editing on this stuff and make promo videos or whatever, I always have to change that because it's in the transcripts and stuff. It just says a friendly voice.
I'll change it next time. Sorry, I didn't realize it was permanent.
Yeah, it's permanent. Your friendly voice. Who wants to start with Sid's stuff?
I mean, Sid is, it's interesting that a character like this, I feel like, gets introduced like first episode right away. Like, and then you see the tension right away. For me, a lot of the story arc around Sid is intriguing from this team dynamics perspective because it's about resistance to change. You know, so we deal with a lot of that with team development and helping organizations navigate change and that sort of thing. And I think Sid is sort of the metaphor of change. And you can watch like the interactions she has with everybody are related to their interactions regarding change in a lot of ways. Not all, but a lot of them. So it's very interesting. That's, for me, why she's an intriguing case study, so to speak.
I would love to dive into that, Chris. And the other piece that I would love to hear your thoughts on is Sydney as potentially a reflection of folks who are in a learning mode, who are maybe impatient and earnestly wanting to share their ideas and implement new things. But maybe it's that thing in some of these episodes of, but you're brand new. And how do you sort of navigate and balance that earnest excitement with fitting into an established routine or culture?
I can imagine Sid rubbing people the wrong way because of that kind of energy. If it wasn't for the characters of maybe Tina or Richie being kind of, you know, so rude to her, I wonder if without those characters, she would actually be the antagonist.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I have friends who have talked about how Sid is their least favorite character.
Lisa is shocked by this.
I want to hear more about that.
There's a seeming impatience in her. She's impatient with the slowness, and I think that it just starts to rub people the wrong way. And so I think it is, for me, I'm watching the interaction, right? And so the development of the engagement between her and Tina, or her and Richie, and how that builds over time, actually builds really quickly. I mean, gosh, there's so many moments, but yeah, I do think that you're right, that without that intersection of watching them come on board and see her value, and sort of that antagonism and that negativity that they show her early on, and then how they slowly sort of get won over by various elements of this new change and direction, she would be a more antagonistic element.
And yeah, and what's Carmi's role in that? Because he endorses her, but then also they have their own sources of friction, I think largely related to her being impatient. You know, when she serves the risotto or whatever that was on the sly, and all of the conflict and chaos that causes. And he's aligning himself with her in public, but then when they're alone, saying like, that wasn't okay. I'm oversimplifying. And sort of what's his role? And I think especially as it relates to, I'm curious to hear your thoughts around how those dynamics relate to having a new person who is earnest and excited, and how do we get the best of their ideas?
I'm almost thinking, like, if we were working with this group, if we walked into this group, if Carmi called one of us to do some work with them, right? And we walked into the space and those were the kind of dynamics. I'm not sure how we would. It's interesting because the reality is, like, they solve their problems because of extreme realities that intersect with them. it would be a chaotic environment to come into. I think we would have to do a lot of work with them, but I'm intrigued by like what work we would do coming in, especially to that. And I'm not sure what I would say to Sid about the way she's acting.
This is sort of that element where when people are experiencing change within their organization, there has to be an element of them making the choice to come on board. You can't force that on somebody. So you're guiding them to this realization. And I think in this show, the piece that I saw, a couple of pieces that called out to me, the first time in the car after they get a C grade for the restaurant and they have to go to the hardware store, and Sid and Richie go to the hardware store and they get back into the car. It's this first time that they're seeing each other as full human beings beyond just their role of new change antagonist, resistant, stuck in the mud historian of the org. Like they're seeing the full person, because she hears him talk to his daughter about things, and he says like, "Oh, I forgot. I think I got the wrong kind." And she's like, "You did. I got the right one." You know, and she covered his butt in that setting. And so like they're seeing each other though for like the first time as full human. So I there is an element there of, and maybe we talked about this. We talked about this, I think, in the last episode, or just of how family has been that foundation that lets them kind of navigate some of these things. But Sid coming in doesn't have that. So there has to be some connections built, and it takes her a while to find those inroads. And so she's pretty consistent when she comes in. There's not a lot of change that she wants to implement change, but she is very consistent, and it's others have to modify to like come to her. And you see it with Tina, with tastings of the food, and how she eventually is like, "Oh wow, this is good." And she ends up like seeking her approval as well. So there's like little moments where you see tipping points between Sid and Tina and Sid and Richie. I've always seen Tina, this is a side thing, but like I've always seen Tina as sort of the Roy Kent of the show. Like she had to be the first one that tips towards the new system. She had to be the first domino that falls, so to speak. As Ted used to say, like the first domino that falls is in Roy's heart, kind of a thing. Like I felt like that was Tina in this change.
I think Sydney does have some internal mechanism of knowing when to stop pushing. So if you go back to the hardware store, Chris, that you were talking about, she tried to convince Richie to get the right product. And then eventually I think she kind of said, "You know what? I'm going to stop pushing, but I'm going to take care of him by buying what I know is the right product." And if somebody doesn't have that internal mechanism and they're earnest and they're bright and they've got really good ideas, but they don't have that internal braking system of when do I stop? How do we as mentors, this is getting a little bit outside of the bear, but how does one learn that?
Yeah, how do you teach that awareness? Because there is that element of that's what's missing in some folks, is that ability to see the situation or the bigger picture beyond their own personal needs. And so how do we teach that awareness of others and awareness of reactions to it, you know?
Right, because there's a scene, and I can't remember all the details. I'm not good at all the details, but she's trying to get Carmi to endorse this recipe that she has, a risotto and something like that. And he kind of patiently listens and he says, "It's good." And she said, "Great, so then what's the problem? Why can't I just do it?" And then he's pointing out, here are the things that you may not be aware of that go into deciding these things. It can be, it's not ready. And remember her face? It's like, I think it's such an interesting balance of something could be good and not ready. And it can be hard to accept that.
I think she's had life experience that has allowed her to be able to also find that point of like stop pushing, because she talks about it, references a lot, the failed catering business. And I think that it was probably like she's aware that she doesn't want that to happen again. And Carmi has an awareness that I think is guiding her towards it. And there's almost the unintentional him going off with Claire and leaving her to on her own to tasting, sample things around. There's almost like the arc of her being able to let go this conversation she's had at certain points with her father, I think, as well, her dad at one point, and him sort of doubting whether or not she was ready, and her being committed to saying, like, no, I need this, I'm ready for this. There's a change that's existed in her that I think if we were working with her as an individual and she wasn't demonstrating that, I think we would have to guide around, like, the patience with it. You know, I think there's an impatience sometimes for success, and I think she probably experienced it.
Well, in the show, I mean, there's an element that, you know, she pushes and pushes and pushes and eventually makes a mistake with the online ordering, to-go ordering. And when she makes the mistake there, Carmi blows up. But just, she had to make a mistake at some point to show, like, that her eagerness was maybe misaligned, and Carmi maybe did know a few things. Like, she almost had to be proven wrong at some point in there, which we hope people don't have to get to that point. Like, her awareness had to be shown to her in some way. Like, it took that mistake to really put wait. And so maybe internally there's a moment of like, oh, wait, maybe I don't know everything I think I know. For me, I think from a training perspective, this is a classic one of, you know, when you're training new folks who are learning a system, and this actually just came out in the last episode that you were doing as well, that I just was listening to in the car this morning. When you're training new people, and this, they only know one way, they judge every other system based on that. I remember early when I was training rock climbers, and you were building climbing anchors, top rope climbing anchors, I would teach them one way to build a climbing anchor. But there's a lot of different ways to build climbing anchors that meet, so, quote unquote, standards, or are safe, you know, and have the proper distribution and all those sorts of things. But those people who only knew one way would go up to the top of the cliff and see another guy's anchor set up and go like, that's wrong, that's dangerous. It was like, no, that's just different. We see that, I think, a lot in training, when people get really eager to make the changes and implement the one thing that they know. They come to a new organization with a system of the way they did things at that place that was the right way. And now they're trying to implement their right way and ignoring the fact that the other system wasn't wrong. They just did it slightly differently. How can we incorporate those ideas together to create a new beautiful thing in the future? I feel like I've seen that a lot in trainings, with a staff member comes in to an organization and they do things a little bit differently. I mean, we had this with the international stuff and ballet techniques, right? The slip, slap, slides, transition to the P-bus, transition to the waterfall, like all those sort of different ballet styles that are out there. And then as the European style was being introduced to some of our summer camps, there was this lot of really rich conversations about what should we be doing and why. Well, for us, maybe it's consistency. It's just so that the client sees the same thing all the time. It's not that the other way is wrong or this way is right. It's just that we want people to feel secure in consistency. And so knowing that there's more than one way to do things.
And that reminds me of a theme that we explored with in our last conversation about this, is that having that really clear system that everyone can follow can almost ironically be the thing that unlocks creativity. Right? Do I mean that? I think I do. That in the bear, I mean, certainly in our work, I believe that, like, once you've got really clear procedures, then you can focus on the things that allow you to be more present with people and really read the group. You're not worried about the rules to your problem solving activity, for example. And I really see that through both seasons of the bear.
So here's my organizational development epiphany, that from what you just said, Lisa, that I'm thinking about, is that, so Sid wants to be creative and introduce all of these new creative things. Carmi wants to get the system organized and get things cleaned up and take a methodic step-by-step process to clean up the system. And there is even a dialogue between Carmi and Sid at one point about how this place is a mess. We got to fix this place first. Then we can get creative with these other elements. They're in his office. I remember them having this conversation about, like, we need to get that in order. But the thing that I think a lot of organizations fail to do when they're navigating these changes is transparency. So Carmi is not a very vocal person. He doesn't share a lot about what's probably going on in his head and what he's doing openly with Sid or with anybody else. He's just trying to implement them. And so I think, I know at least I have, when I'm seeing groups struggle through changes, it's potentially because they don't understand or know, and they're dealing with them in the moment. They don't have that transparency from the higher ups to let them know why. Why is this element changing? Why is this necessary? It's worked fine before. Leave us alone, kind of, you know. And so I think organizations that navigate that change well have leadership that's really good about being transparent about why we're doing things, what's going on, and what are the background and underlying reasons to try to get everybody on board and bought in.
Definitely the why was missing. And you're right. I agree with you, Chris, that Carmi is not communicative about his end game and why he's doing things. But what do you think about the other aspect of that, which is how will this change benefit you? Do you think that the chefs, was that part of what was communicated or was that learned over time?
I think it's learned over time because we start to see Tina needs to get won over because she's just like, just leave it alone. And Richie constantly with the mantra of like, don't mess with the system. You know, we've got to, what is it, system? Is that the word he uses? Like, we have a system, leave it alone. And then there's little moments where the relationship between Tina and Sid, she's very resistant. And I feel like one of the first chips to fall, I don't know what the right metaphor there is, what the saying is, but that she hears Ibrahim compliment Sid at one point, and you see a recognition of like, wait, he's complimenting her. And then we start to slowly see that shift kind of from that point forward.
I think you could look at both Tina and Sid and you could say both of them are right and both of them are wrong early on. The viewer could look at either one of them and find points of agreement. Like, I understand why people might be upset by Sid. I think I can agree why people would be upset by Tina. And it's almost like they both have to let go of something in order for it to work out. Because there is moments for Sid where she's very creative, coming in early, wanting to change things. The reality of the show, and I think why the show is so successful and it works, is they are kind of extreme. Everyone in that group is extreme scenarios of people everyone has interacted with at a certain point. The other extreme is they've got a very small time window. I can't imagine, like, if we went into a training, sometimes we have that where the training is limited, but to say, like, if we don't get this figured out by this time, this business is closed. Like, that is a level of extreme. Potentially, even Carmi hasn't even explained to Sid what the purpose is for her coming in, other than I'm bringing in this young, excited person. We need to keep this business alive. Sid's given room to be able to be creative, but it's not at the advantage of others. And so Carmi has this leadership track where, for the most part, he's actually a failing leader. Like, he's not leading really well at all. He's setting people up for failure, and he sets Sid up for failure in multiple cases. And it's just through those kind of extreme moments that people have an epiphany or find like, oh yeah, that's exciting, or your food is good, or suddenly there's a big shift for Tina, and now she's like willing to wear the apron. Tina is saying yes Jeff, not yes chef, as a bit of a dig at the whole systems notion. And then there's that transition where Tina will says yes chef, and it's like there's a movement towards, you know, understanding. And I think that's the why, right? Like, she's finally understood why all of this stuff is important, but absolutely never explained.
It's interesting you say that, because there's she does that, and then I feel like in season two it shifts where she is saying yes chef, but she calls him Jeffrey. Right. So it becomes like a playful nickname as opposed to this. Yes, Jeff.
It's funny. I have to quickly tell this story because it relates to the names. It was at a training and I kind of had this same experience. So I go into a training and this guy, it happens with like kids a lot, but this was the first time I really remember it with an adult group. So a group of teachers walk in and there's a guy with a name tag on, and the name tag is Rick. And so I'm then doing a group juggle activity, and I use it as an example because I hadn't done any names at that point. Some of the people I sort of knew, but I throw him the thing and I say, like, I'll look at you and I'll say, Rick, and everyone starts laughing. And I realize I'm the immediate butt of a joke because that's not his name. And he's done the classic thing of like giving me a fake name. And so I felt like there was already like, oh man, this is going to be fun. But by the end of it, I committed to the bit, right? Just like he'd committed. I said, no, I'm willing to commit to it too. And so occasionally, if he did something that would annoy me, I'd call him Rick. If he did something I liked, I'd go, oh, that's fantastic, Sean, which was his real name. Like, that kind of joke as much as it was like at the start, he was doing it obviously to in a negative way. And then I could have responded in a way that would have been negative. The joke became the thing that bonded the two of us. And it was a funny thing that continued. And then he trusted me. It changed the whole dynamic because I was willing to lean into it rather than be so against it.
Yeah, Carby never corrects her and says, no, I'm actually saying chef. I wonder, I alluded to this last time, but I'm curious your thoughts around identities and how, if these characters were of different ages, genders, ethnicities, how Sydney's age, for example, is a part of how she fits in. So for folks who may not have seen The Bear, I don't know why you're listening to this episode, but good for you. I think she's the youngest person in the kitchen. It's my assumption. Maybe I sort of maybe see her and Marcus as the same age. She is the outsider. She's not the only person of color. And I think that that's significant in some other ways. But how did her age play into all of the dynamics that we're talking about, do you think?
You know, from a training perspective, we talked a bit about imposter syndrome in the past. And like you come into a space and you're going to try to teach someone and immediately, you know, I've mentioned already, like I got in a previous training, the exact Tina quote of, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive. It's a very challenging space to be in. So I think that's partly why, as I look as a younger professional, I look at Sid and don't find her abrasive. I'm rooting because I do empathize with that feeling of coming into a space and trying to have a voice and feeling like I have to prove myself more. And you can see that in her.
Do you think that Sid acts in a way as if she's trying to prove herself?
I think Sid's the opposite of imposter syndrome that I see in Carmi. So Sid, I feel like, has an assurance of herself and her training. She is the very confident person coming in that I can fix this place. I mean, it's telling that Carmi doesn't even remember that she's coming. Who are you? What are you here for? Oh, right. Great. You're going to do family and you're going to, you know, like, there's just this element of dismissiveness. And this is sort of part of his lack of transparency and what he's trying to do and may have sounded like a good idea that this talented, skilled person who's going to come in here, they might be able to help me. But she comes in with a lot of confidence and that confidence is actually abrasive to the other characters. And so she's young, confident, skilled, coming in with a lot of talent and knows her stuff because of her training. It has big ideas of what this place could be. And partly because Carmi isn't giving her any guardrails. Like he's so quiet in his leadership style. He isn't giving her direction. She's just taking every opportunity she can to try to implement changes and do things in her own way. And so she's not benefiting from his knowledge and wisdom that he might be able to share with her because he's not sharing it. And she's very confident that she knows what's best and what she could do and ready to charge forward. And that's where some of the tension comes in. Like you think about onboarding, Carmi doesn't onboard her into the kitchen and introduce her in any way to ease that in. So she's immediately a thorn in the side of Tina, who is older and more experienced in this kitchen than she has been alive, you know, and to Richie, who there's a system and we do it this way. And Mikey always did it this way. And we can see he's holding on to the past partly because he lost a friend. And so there's a part of that sort of, the more he lets change, the more his old neighborhood, his old friend is all going to go away. So he's somewhat resistant to change, not for the benefit of the business, but for his own personal comfort. You know, we see that in organizations as well. So yeah, it's really interesting. I think she comes in with a lot of confidence and that's actually what creates that abrasion. And then she needs to find a way to navigate that and actually make some mistakes in a safe way and see that her leader, Carmi, isn't going to just throw her out when that happens, but coach and guide in his own way.
And that can be a really tough dynamic if you're young, competent, and some of the other terms you just said, Chris, you know, skilled and self-assured, you've got experience. What I don't see that Sid has, and yeah, she's a character that I enjoy the most. I just enjoy her arc, is curiosity. And I think that's the thing that balances that whole thing out when you're new somewhere, especially if you're younger, you're the outsider. If you don't come in saying, help me understand, but you're coming in saying, we got to do the risotto, that can contribute greatly to that sense of friction. Because I don't think she gives, her character doesn't give a lot of the other characters a chance to say, well, this is why, this is who I am. This is why I do it this way.
Oh, yeah. And there's an interesting scene with Marcus too, because we haven't talked about Sid and Marcus at all, but Marcus is so kind and very curious. Like that's sort of, he's the opposite of her. And so there's that scene in the walk-in where she is so reassured and self-assured that she wants to prove herself, because she does, you can start to see her confidence weakening a little bit as she's questioning whether she actually does know and if she's going to be able to make this work. And Marcus is like, do you want to help me, want me to help you get that down off the shelf, the big bucket of broth or whatever it is? And then she's like, no. And she's just like, no, I'm going to do it. And then she spills it all over the floor in the walk-in. And Marcus doesn't say a word, just runs out, grabs towels, starts cleaning it up. Like never like demeans her, laughs at her, just immediately is like, no, I'm here to help you. I'm supporting you. There's this element of humility there. It builds a bit of a trust and bond between their characters, I think.
That she doesn't over-apologize or say, you know, I don't remember exactly how she handles it, but it's, I think she's also pretty quiet.
I almost wonder if the confidence, though, we see at the start is a bit of a facade. Like the fake it to the mate till you make it experience, I think that's almost a evaluation on the fact that fake it till you make it is doesn't work. There is that point where she makes mistakes, and she is skilled, and she has all these things. And I think that some of those mistakes have to happen. The online thing and the dropping of the from the pot. You've got to think where is she coming from into this experience? We don't learn that until much later on, that she's coming from a place of failing. So she doesn't. I can't imagine she's coming in with confidence, full confidence in herself. I think that she's being, because she's not being given guardrails, and she's been put into a really aggressive environment, that she's putting on this facade, I have to be confident to be able to get my thoughts across. Because if I go in with curiosity, that might be seen as weakness. And so I think that there's a level of like, I'm going to try to be as strong as I can in this moment. And I think that that is actually a failing of the environment that she's being placed in, of once again, a failing of the leadership. Because I think if people have to come into an environment, a work environment, have to be that kind of, I don't know, say bullish, but like come in with confidence in a certain way, that's actually a failing of a group. Like a vulnerability is a strength. And I don't see that initially. I see that actually, in fact, of all characters, they're all in their own way demonstrating a level of confidence that is not actually true, because they're all, there's doubt across everyone, but no one wants to admit it early on. And I think it's that lowering of the guard, the lowering of the walls, and actually making mistakes in front of others, that all of the positive stuff comes from. I think in all characters, there's a letting go before they have that support of each other. And so she's coming into, as we talk about psychological safe work environment, she is certainly not coming into that. Like it's quite the opposite of an experience. Because what you say, Lisa, about curiosity, absolutely true. But can you imagine walking into that environment and being willing to be curious?
Yeah, it would take a lot of effort for her to show up with curiosity. I don't know what the significance of this, but one of my favorite scenes with Sid is at the end when she makes Carmi's sister Natalie an omelet. That was like something significant about seeing her. I mean, she cooked for Marcus at home. I wasn't as moved by that, but seeing her take care of Carmi's sister, she's pregnant. She wasn't feeling great. I don't know. What do you make of that? And what did that mean for you to see that scene?
For me, that's an element, and she connects with Carmi on this too, when they're fixing the table, right? And so they talk about that omelet. And I think that's for me where it became a little bit more clear of the significance of that moment, and that the love of the game, the love of cooking, and sort of a reminder of the why. Why are we doing this? As Carmi mentions numerous times, this isn't fun. This doesn't bring me joy to renovate a kitchen, to do all this stuff. Like it's hard work. They had to be reminded of why, their purpose. And so for me, that may have been Sid's moment of recognition of her purpose. It's like, I love to cook and make people feel good about the food that they're eating. and watch them eat. I mean, she even says something to that effect. And I think that, like, yeah, that's that element of coming to purpose for her. And I really love that scene as well. So for me, that was a really good moment of when we worked with sports teams. Jim and I used to always talk about if we could just get the Bruins to go play pond hockey again, like to remember why they love the game, you know, to get out of all of the politics of sport and professional sports and just remember that they love the game and go take them and play pond hockey. Just sort of the pure joy of the game. And I feel like that moment is kind of her. She's not cooking for the restaurant. She's just doing it to nourish somebody and make them feel good. And it reminds her of why she does it.
Yeah, that's a great point around sort of getting back to purpose. I can see that.
Awesome. I'm going to end it here. Hopefully this has spurred some interest into the characters again, encouraged you to watch it again. I'm assuming we're getting some sort of cutback or something from FX or Hulu, because no doubt their viewership is going up, and they're noticing it. You know, the extra 10 people that watch it because they listen to this, it's probably really registering for them. And I'm excited by the fact that at some point we're going to get Jeremy Allen White and others to talk about their Emmys on this podcast. But anyway, thanks, Chris, and thank you, friendly voice.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks for listening to Vertical Playcast.
And then what about thanks for listening to High Fives Podcast?
Can you do it?
Okay, try.
Thanks for giving. I think I'll pass the guy.